too excited to read. I looked out of the window at the brown bomber and couldn't believe it was going to take us all the way to Alabama. The trip didn't become real to us until 9 in the morning, when we were in the car waving goodbye to Rufus and heading toward I-75, a road that runs all the way from Flint to Florida. One road. We weren't even on the expressway before Mama started reading out of her notebook, telling us everything that was planned for the next 3 days. Day one, today. We leave Flint and drive for 300 miles in about 5 or 5.5 hours. That will take us to Cincinnati. 300 miles in one day. It just didn't seem like that could be done. Me and Joey shook our heads. Byron looked out of the window. In Cincinnati, we'll get a room in a motel. We brought plenty of blankets so you kids will be able to sleep on the floor. Me and Joey cheered. We'd never been in a motel before. Byron just kept looking out of the window. Day two, tomorrow. Now, your daddy and this car both aren't as young as they used to be, so we don't want to push either one of them too hard. Dad looked shocked. So, we rise and shine real early in the morning and drive for 250 miles in about 5 or 6 hours. That should put us right outside of Knoxville, Tennessee. Mr. Johnson says that there are some clean, safe rest stops there so we can spend the night in the car. If that's true, we'll stay there. If not, we'll have to see if we can find a motel room in Knoxville. Day three, Monday. This is going to be a tough day for your daddy because he's going to have to drive for more than 6 hours. After we leave Knoxville, we've got about 300 miles to go. If we leave early enough, we'll be pulling into home about 3 in the afternoon. Mama turned the page in her notebook. We're going to be able to stop once a day on the way down for hamburgers and once a day on the way back. Me and Joey cheered again at this news. Byron acted like he didn't hear. Now, if we sleep in the car outside Knoxville, we can stop one more bonus time coming and going. Otherwise, the cooler in the trunk is full of chicken, soda pop, potato salad, sandwiches, and fruit for the whole trip down. I'm sure Grandma Sands will have everything set for the way back. I thought about it for a minute and then asked, Mama, how come we don't just drive until Dad gets tired, then stop? Dad did an imitation of a hillbilly accent. 'Cause, boy, this here is the deep south you all is gonna be driving through. Y'all colored folks can't be just pulling up to any old way and be expecting to get in the room and the food. You hear, boy? I said, you hear what I'm saying, boy? Me and Joey laughed again, and even Byron kind of smiled. This only encouraged Dad to say some more Southern-style stuff. Y'all didn't know that, boy? What's the matter with you? You think this here is America? Mama had everything planned about the trip. Everything. Where we'd eat, when we'd eat, who got bologna sandwiches on day one, who got tuna fish on day two, who got peanut butter and jelly on day three. She'd figured out how long we could hold ourselves between going to the bathroom, how much money we'd spend on hamburgers, how much was for any emergencies, everything. She'd figured out who'd get the windows on each day and who was responsible for keeping paper and junk from piling up in the car. When she finished reading all that stuff to us, I asked her if I could look at the notebook. She handed it to me, and I saw written on the cover in big black letters, "The Watsons Go to Birmingham, 1963. She'd even drawn a picture of a flower with a big, fat, stupid bird trying to land on it. Man, Mama sure is a bad artist. Why is this bird trying to land on a flower, Mama? Dad cracked up. Who, Kenneth? I asked her the same thing, and she was highly offended. Mama said, "That's a bee, not a bird." I guess if you squinted up your eyes, it might look like a bee, but not too much. Mom had also gone to the library to look up stuff about every state we'd travel through. We heard a bunch of boring junk about the expressway, how many years it took to finish it, how many miles long it was, how much it cost to build it, how it ran all the way from the Upper Peninsula in Michigan to Florida. All kinds of thrilling news. The only thing that was a little bit interesting was how many people got killed and hurt making the road. You never would think putting an expressway down was so dangerous. She'd bought books and puzzles and games, too. She really did try to make the trip interesting. The most interesting part for me, though, was going to be Byron. 2 days before we'd left, Buphead came by to visit Byron. The three of us were in Mai and Bai's bedroom. They'd tried to bully me out of the room, but I stayed. They were sitting in the upper bunk, and I was in the lower one.
"Man," Buphead complained, "I couldn't live with your old man. We'd be coming to blows daily, Jack."
"What can I say?" Byron answered.
"Not much. I can't believe they're gonna make you spend the whole blanged summer in hot old Alabama. Shoot, I'd find somewhere else to stay. You're gonna be black as the ace of spades when you get back. They got some sure enough sun down there."
"Yeah, but dig, I got a way to pay them jive old squares back."
"Yeah? What you gonna do?"
"I ain't even sure I'm gonna go, but if I do, I know how they is. They're gonna try some of that Ozzie and Harriet TV show mess on the way down. You know, playing games and counting cows and guessing how many red cars we're gonna see in the next 2 miles and all that kind of 369, but I'm ready for them."
"Yeah?"
"Yeah. I got something that'll mess that junk up for all of them."
"What's that, Daddy-O?"
Byron remembered I was still in the lower bunk and stuck his head over the edge, then pointed at me.
"You say one word about this to anyone, and I'm gonna jack your little lightweight behind up. You hear?"
I said, "Aw, man." Bai disappeared back into the top bunk.
"Yeah, Bubhead, if I do go, I'm gonna go that whole blang trip, and no matter what they do to me, I ain't gonna say one single word."
"Whoa. How long that trip gonna take?"
3 days.
"Cool.
That'll show 'em."
They slapped palms, and Bai said, "Yeah, you know it will." But as soon as we got to Detroit, Byron said, "How are we gonna work this record player?" Dad looked in the rearview mirror and said to Bai,
"What do you mean?"
"We gonna take turns?"
"Well, Byron, I don't think we'll be playing it for quite a bit yet. We can carry CKLW all the way down into Ohio, and they play some pretty good music.
But when we do play it, we gonna take turns?"
"Sure."
"Cool. Am I first?"
"Sure. We'll go by seniority."
Dad was in the United Auto Workers at work, so seniority was real important in our house.
"Cool."
I couldn't help myself. I leaned over Joey and said, kind of quiet, to Bai,
"I guess you really showed them, didn't you? Boy, they were really begging you to talk, weren't they, Daddy-O?"
Byron made sure Joey wasn't watching, then flipped me a dirty finger sign and made his eyes go crossed. "On the left, kids, is Tiger Stadium." Mama was pointing out all the important things we passed on the way. As the payback for giving me the dirty finger, I said out loud to Bai, "How many cows you counted, Bai? How many red cars so far?" He gave me his famous death stare, then leaned over Joey and whispered,
"No cars, no cows, but I counted your mama 6 times already."
I couldn't believe it. What kind of person would talk about their own mama? I said, "That's your mother too, stupid." I knew he didn't care, though, but I had to get him back, so I called him the only thing that bothered him. I said, "You might have counted my mama 6 times, but have you counted your mouth lately, lipless wonder?"
I got him.
He showed his teeth and said, "You little," and tried to grab me. Dad's eye was in the rearview mirror.
"All right, you two." I said, "No nonsense, and I don't mean maybe."
Byron used silent mouth language to say, "I'm gonna jack you up in Alabama, you punk." So, as we drove down I-75 headed for Birmingham, I felt pretty good. Even though every time I looked at Bai, his eyes were crossed, I didn't care because this one time, I bugged him more than he bugged me.
Tangled Up in God's Beard. Ohio about 1 minute away.
This was the first interesting thing that Mama had come up with since we'd been through Detroit. Just outside of Toledo, we pulled over at a rest stop. Mama said, "Okay, who's got to go to the bathroom? Who's hungry?" We got out of the car and started scratching and stretching. The Ohio rest stop was really cool. It was chopped right out of the forest and had picnic tables made out of giant logs.
The bathrooms were made out of the same kind of log cabin wood. The only thing about them was that they looked kind of small from the outside. Mama looked in her Watson's Go to Birmingham 1963 book and told us, "Okay, just a sandwich, some fruit, and some Kool-Aid here. Daniel, could you open the trunk so I can get the things out of the cooler?" While Mama got the food and Dad looked under the hood of the brown bomber, I went to the door in the little log cabin that had "Men" carved on it. As soon as I opened the door, I gagged. The toilets in Ohio weren't anything like Michigan toilets. Instead of a white stool with a seat, there was just a seat on a piece of wood with a great big open black hole underneath with the sounds of flies coming out of it. No flusher, no water, no nothing. It looked like if you sat on the seat, you might end up getting sucked down under Ohio somewhere. I breathed through my mouth and spent only enough time in that log cabin bathroom to unroll a bunch of toilet paper. The woods outside looked like a whole lot better bathroom. When I was done in the woods, I passed Byron, who forgot again about his promise not to talk. He told me, "Man, they must be crazy if they think I'm gonna set my behind on that hole." Bai's hands were full of toilet paper, too. We ate our lunch on one of the picnic tables, and Mama made a jug of Kool-Aid with water that me and Joey pumped. Only Mama liked it, though. The water seemed like it had metal in it and made the Kool-Aid taste like grape medicine. Me, Dad, Bai, and Joey dumped our Kool-Aid when Mama wasn't looking, but I had to ask for seconds and plug my nose and drink it because day one was my day to have peanut butter and jelly, and Mama always puts too much peanut butter on the sandwich, and you've got to have something to wash it down in case you start choking. When we finished eating, Byron asked, "What's the word on them toilets?" Mama and Dad cracked up. "So you like those, huh?" Dad said. Mama said, "You better get used to those, Byron. That's an outhouse, and that's what Grandma Sands has." "What?" If you try to be cool all the time and something surprises you, you sure do look stupid. "Uh-huh," Dad said. "That's where you're going to be taking care of your business for a while." Bai said, "Wait, let me dig this. You mean if I gotta go to the bathroom, I gotta go outside into a little nasty thing like that? Ain't they got no sanitation laws down there? How you gonna have a hole for a toilet and not get folks sick? Don't them things attract flies?" Mama and Dad laughed again. Mama said, "Your Grandma Sands always says it seems a lot nastier to her to be doing that in the house. The way she looks at it, a house is a whole lot nicer place if the facilities are outside." "Oh, I remember those outhouses," Dad said. "I remember when we used to go visit my grandmother in the country, and there would be a Sears catalog in the outhouse. And when you were done, you just tore a page out of the catalog and..." "We get the point, Daniel," Mama stopped Dad. After lunch, Bai went back into the log cabin outhouse and came back with his pockets bulging with toilet paper. He told me, "Man, they must be on dope if they think I'm gonna wipe my butt on some rough old catalog paper." We loaded the cooler back in the car and got back on I-75. When you're 10 years old, like me, some of the time, no matter how excited you are or no matter how hard you try, you just can't help falling asleep in the car. I did a lot better than Joey, though. She was out before I'd even sucked all the leftover peanut butter out of my teeth. She stretched out across the back seat, and me and Bai argued about who would hold her head and who would hold her feet. Joey drooled a lot, and so it was the worst job to hold her head. We had teased Mama so many times about planning everything so much in her notebook that Bai decided to be cute and asked, "Could someone check that Watson's Go to Birmingham book and see who's supposed to be holding Joey's leaking head for the first 100 miles in Ohio?" Mama and Dad looked at each other and laughed, and I did too. I really don't know why bullies have such a good sense of humor. It didn't matter who won the argument, because the car started rocking me to sleep. Maybe someone could say the brown bomber was old and ugly, but you could never say anything bad about its seats. They were the best things in the world. I leaned my head back and watched Ohio go zipping by. I couldn't keep my head from sinking deeper and deeper into the brown bomber's seat. I woke up and got real nervous real fast. I felt something wet in my pants starting to run down my leg. I opened my eyes and said, "Whew!" It was just Joey drooling all over me. I complained and Mama made Bai take Joey's head for a while. I took her shoes off for her, and inside one of her shoes was a kind of worn-down picture of a little white boy with a girl's hairdo and a smiling dog. In a circle around both of them, it said, Buster Brown. As I drifted back to sleep, I wondered what a little white boy would think if he knew he was getting stepped on every day by my sister. Then my neck got rubberized again, and my head nodded down. It nodded back up when I heard Mama say real soft to Dad, How you doing? Cincinnati's just ahead. Oh, I'm fine. I've still got a lot in me. I think I'll just stop in Cincy for a stretch and some gas. Really? Mama didn't sound too happy. Sure, why not? The kids are all asleep, and you look like you were about gone yourself. Mama didn't say anything, but I knew she'd have to change her plans if we didn't stop for the night in Cincinnati. Dad kept trying to make it seem okay. He smiled and said, Don't worry, Wilona. We might as well just go a little further. I wanted to lean up and whisper to Mama that I knew what Dad was planning, but the last time I was asleep, Byron had put Joey's head back in my lap, and I was just too lazy to move her. But I knew if I wasn't so sleepy, I could tell Mama what I'd heard Dad and Mr. Johnson saying before we left. Mr. Johnson knew a lot about cars, so Dad asked him to take a good look at the bomber before we went to Alabama. I was sitting in the car pretending I was driving, and Dad and Mr. Johnson were under the hood. Oh, yeah, Daniel. This baby's sound as a dollar. Well, let me ask you something, Theo, Dad had said. Do you think she could run it to Alabama straight? Mr. Johnson thought for a minute. I don't see why not. As long as you keep your eye on the oil and the water, it shouldn't give you a lick of trouble. The question isn't the car. The question is, could you do it straight? Well, the most I've done before is 8 hours, and Wilona says this will take about 15. But I've talked to some people in the shop, and they say it shouldn't be too tough. A couple of them are from Texas, and they say they've driven it straight. Alabama's closer, so why not? This Plymouth can do it if you can, Daniel. Good. Besides, think of the money we'll save. I'ma give it a shot, but I'm not gonna tell Wilona. She'd die. She's got this whole trip planned, down to the last minute. Dad made his voice go kind of high and southern. And Daniel, between Lexington and Chattanooga, you will inhale 105,564 times, and you'll blink 436,475 times. That is, of course, unless you see something exciting, in which case you will inhale 123,876 times and blink 437,098 times. Dad and Mr. Johnson cracked up. As we were going into Cincinnati, I wanted to lean up and whisper to Mama, Hang on, Mama. You're going to blink and inhale about 62 zillion more times before you get out of this car. But the warm air and the highway noise and the brown bomber's seat and the way Joey was breathing all pushed me back to sleep. I was out through most of Kentucky, even though we stopped at some more Ohio-style rest stops. I was so tired that I even used a couple of outhouses, but I kept the door open and made Dad stand outside so, in case I fell in, he'd be able to pull me out. The next time I woke up, we were pulled over at a Tennessee rest stop. There were no bathrooms and no outhouses or anything, just a pump and a picnic table. When Dad turned the headlights off, everything disappeared into the blackest night anyone had ever seen. As we looked out of the windows, Mama checked her notebook, then announced, This is the Appalachia Mountains. We're over 6,000 feet above sea level. This is higher than we've ever been before. And she didn't sound real happy about it either. All four doors of the brown bomber opened, and the weird Watsons got out. As soon as everyone was awake enough to look around, we all bunched up and hugged up around Mama and Dad, even cool Byron. Dad laughed. What's wrong with you guys? Daddy, look how scary it is here, Joey said, pointing at all the giant shapes in the darkness. Nonsense, pumpkin. Those are just the mountains. What Dad was calling just the mountains were the scariest things I'd ever seen. On every side of us were great, big, black hills, and behind these were even bigger, blacker hills, and behind these were the biggest, blackest hills. It looked like someone had crumpled up a pitch-black blanket and dropped the weird Watsons down in the middle of it. The air up this high didn't seem right either. It made you feel like something bad was going to happen. If this was a movie, there would be loud, scary organ music playing right now. "Mommy?" Joey asked, sounding real scared. "Where did all these stars come from?" We all looked up, and instead of seeing the normal amount of stars, it looked like there had been a star explosion. There were more stars in the sky than empty space. "That's because the air is so clean here. This looks like the sky in Birmingham." Up close to us in the rest stop, all we could see was the pump. It looked like a deformed, evil, one-armed space robot. As our eyes got used to the dark, we could also see the picnic table, and behind it, that black woods. Most of the time, Mama and Dad don't like arguing in public, but Mama was real hot. She said, "Well, do you see what your nonstop driving has done? Do you see? Instead of being in a motel, you've driven us straight into hell." That got everyone's attention because Mama almost never cusses. This really scared me. I know it's stupid, but before I could stop myself, I said, "Hell, I thought you said this was Tennessee." Joey started boo-hooing right away. After we nervously nibbled on snacks, everyone sat on the same side of the picnic table. Me and Bai had to go to the bathroom in the woods. We found two trees where we could keep our eye on each other, and I said, "Bai, do you think there are snakes out here?" "Snakes? I ain't scared of no damn snake. It's the people I'm worried about." I stopped looking at the ground and began watching the black woods. What people? I wished I'd picked a tree closer to Byron. "Didn't you hear Mama say this was Appalachia?" "So? Man, they got crackers and rednecks up here that ain't never seen no Negroes before. If they caught your ass out here like this, they'd hang you now, then eat you later." "What's a redneck?" "A hillbilly. Only worse, some of them don't even speak English." We made a break for the brown bomber. If Byron was trying to scare me, he was scaring himself too. I went too fast, though, and I felt a couple of warm drips dribbling down my leg. This time, I couldn't blame it on Joey's drooling either, but I didn't care. Having a little pee in your pants had to be better than being dinner for some redneck. We loaded the car back up, and no one really relaxed until Dad drove back out on I-75 and turned the headlights on. The lights knocked some of the darkness out of the way, and we felt safe again. Everybody was better and laughing and talking a mile a minute. "I can't believe how this air feels," Dad said. He was right. Everything smelled light and green. "Whose turn is it on the Ultra Glide?" "Mine," I yelled. I handed Mama Yakety Yak, and they all moaned. Dad stuck his hand out of the window just as the song came on and said, "Feel that coolness. It feels like you're running your fingers through silk." Me, Mama, Joey, and even Daddy Cool all did what Dad told us to do. And Dad was right. It felt great. "Wiggle your fingers in it," Dad said. We all did, and the air seemed slippery and cool as it blew on your hand. "We're so high, and the air is so perfect that, do you know what I think we're doing?" Dad asked. "What?" "I think we've got our fingers in God's beard, and as we drive along, we're tickling him." Byron acted like he was going to throw up. As we drove down the mountain, with our arms sticking out of the windows and our fingers wiggling in the breeze, I thought the brown bomber must look like a bug, lying on its back with four skinny brown legs kicking and twitching to try to put it back on its feet. Whatever we were doing, it was the best part of the trip so far. What could be better than driving on a mountain while Yakety Yak played and cool, light air blew all over you? Bobo Brazil meets the Sheik. The next time I woke up, it was just starting to get light, and somehow I was in the front seat and Mama was in the back. When my eyes got used to where they were, I saw Dad holding the steering wheel with one hand and resting his other one on the mirror outside the car. The green lights from the dashboard made his face look puffed up and tired, but he was smiling to himself. I knew what woke me up this time. The Ultra Glide was stuck. As we drove, the record was saying, "And don't forget whose take, and don't forget whose take, and don't forget whose take, and don't forget whose take." I started to say something to Dad, but he looked pretty happy, and before I could open my mouth, the record hypnotized me back to sleep. The next time I woke up, it was bright day, and Joey was in the front seat drooling all over me. The Ultra Glide was still saying, "And don't forget whose take." Dad must have heard me breathe different, because he looked down at me and said, "Well, well, well, look who's decided to come back to life." "Hi, Dad. Are we there yet?" "Oh, no. Et tu, Brute? You were my last hope. With Bi and Joey and your mother popping up every few minutes asking, 'Are we there yet?' it's been like a stuck record." "Dad, it is a stuck record." Dad seemed to notice the record player for the first time. "Ah, that. Well, Kenny, I'm afraid it's more than a stuck record. Something isn't working right." He lifted the arm off the record and looked in the back seat at Mama, who was asleep. "But let's keep that between you and me, okay?" "Sure. How long before we stop?" "We'll be at Grandma Sands before you know it." Joey had been listening to us. "Daddy, that's what you said the last time. How much longer? I'm sick of this old car." "Not too much longer, honey." "I'll stay up and keep you company, Dad," I said. "Yeah, me too," Joey added. I don't know who conked out first. I didn't remember anything about coming into Alabama. I don't think any of us did, especially Dad. We'd been in the car so long that Dad had started growing a beard. Little, tiny hairs were coming out of his face. Most of them were black, but 9 or 10 of them were white. Dad was looking real, real bad. He was still smiling to himself, but now instead of a real smile, it looked like he was gripping his teeth together to get ready to bite something. The worst thing, though, was that he had turned the radio on and was listening to country and western music. He was even tapping his hand on the steering wheel like he was really enjoying it. "Dad, do you know what you're listening to?" Dad decided to cut up. "Kenneth, I've been thinking about having all of our names changed to country names when we get back to Michigan. I'll be Clem, you'll be Homer, Bi will be Billy Bob, Joey will be Daisy May, and your mother will be, well, I guess your mother's name can just stay Wilona. I don't think we're going to find a more country name than that one, do you?" Me and Dad cracked up. Mama's head popped up from the back seat, and she said in a super southern style, "Okay, Clem. I hopes when us get to Birmingham, you can explain to these here babies' granny how come you turned them into little zombies from sitting in this car so long." Dad laughed. "Now, Wilona, you know it hasn't been that bad. In fact, I'm going to admit to something that I probably shouldn't." Mama rubbed her eyes, then put her hand on top of my head. "You gonna do this here admitting in front of little Homer here?" Everybody started waking up and stretching and scratching. Mama kept teasing Dad. "And what about some vittles, Clem? The sun been up for hours and you ain't even been out to check them trap lines to see if we's gonna have some coon pie for breakfast." Dad yelled out, "Yee-haw!" and then said, "Haven't any of you wondered why you've been sleeping like a little herd of angels?" Byron said, "Like there was anything to keep anybody awake in this car full of squares." "Anyway," Dad said, "I'ma let the cat out of the bag. I've been using 2 kinds of mind power to keep this trip going so smooth. First, after a while, I started locking into the road, and there was nothing to it. Just me, the road, and the brown bomber all tuned into one hum, and as long as I listened to that hum, everything was fine. My biggest worry was you, Wilona. I knew after a while you'd figure out that I wasn't going to stop. And you gotta admit, you were good and salty about it at first, right?" "You know I still am." Mama was upset because all of her notebook planning had been wasted. "But Wilona, you got to admit that once you figured out how much money we'd save by not stopping, you went along with it." Mama kind of grunted, not saying yes and not saying no. Dad cleared his throat and rubbed his hand over the little stubbles that were coming out of his chin. We all knew this was a sign that he was going to start acting the fool. He'd tested Mama to see how mad she really was and decided it was safe to play around.
"Yep," he said, rubbing his chin until it made a scratchy sawing sound. 18 big hours in a row, nearly 1,000 miles. I had a load to deliver and," he punched the air with his fist, "I delivered it. It's just like this great song I heard a couple of miles back. Big Daddy was a truck-driving man. I'm not gonna lie and say it was easy, There was many a time I wanted to stop, but when those times came, I'd just think of my old pal Joe Espinoza driving all the way to Texas without stopping, and I'd keep my foot in that tank. Oh, yeah. There were times when your mother was giving me looks like she was gonna kill me the first time I slowed down, but I just kept smiling at her and kept the brown bomber chugging on. I'd tell her, you're right, sweetheart. We'll just go a little bit farther. And you kids, you talk about some pathetic, tortured-looking little faces. 18 hours in a car can age a kid 40 years. Yeah, I swear, I've been looking in the rearview mirror and wondering where my babies were and where these three bad-dispositioned, sour-faced, middle-aged midgets came from. But your sorry little mugs couldn't stop me either. In spite of all the crying and bawling and moaning and wailing and gnashing of teeth, I kept pushing on. Dad must have been real tired. He hardly ever talked this much straight. I got to admit to the other trick I used, too, but I can't take full credit for this one. I hope Dad was going to say that I helped him by keeping him company, but nope. Some of the credit has to go to Scientific Popular. That was the name of a magazine that came to Dad in the mail every month. It had real cool covers. There were always drawings of smiling white people on it, standing next to cars with wings, or sitting in private submarines, or eating a whole meal in one little pill. The covers were real interesting, but the insides were real boring. Yep, good old Scientific Popular. They had an article about sound frequencies and said that certain sounds caused certain effects in all living things, even Weird Watsons. It said the sound of one of those vacuum cleaners can put a baby to sleep. And it works. Mama laughed a little. It was strange for all of us to see Dad talking so much. When we first hit Alabama and had a bunch of miles to go and you kids were popping up like prairie dogs and crying and saying, how much longer, and Mommy, make him stop, and is that Birmingham over there? All I did was use that vacuum trick. I started buzzing like a Hoover vacuum, and you guys dropped off in reverse seniority. First Joey dropped, then Kenneth, then Daddy Cool, then even you, Wilona. Shoot, you guys were out cold from the state line on. I threw a blanket over you in the back seat, and then even those whines and whimpers and moans you guys were making didn't bother me. And you, Wilona, once I got buzzing, the only thing that was coming out of your mouth was drool. Is that what that sound was? Mama asked. I thought you were driving so long you'd lost your mind. I'm still not sure you haven't. Everybody woke up, but it was a fake wake-up. We were all soon back asleep, even though it was morning. The next thing I remember, I was waking up back in the back seat, and Mama was saying, real, real Southern, "Babies, we home." Mama was honking the horn of the brown bomber like she was crazy. I raised my head out of the seat to look at what Mama was calling home and couldn't believe it. Birmingham looked a lot like Flint. There were real houses, not little log cabins all over the place, and great big beautiful trees. Most of all, though, there was the sun. Me, Joetta, and Byron unfolded ourselves into the Alabama heat, and it was like we all remembered at once that we were going to finally see what Grandma Sands really looked like. We all bunched up together by Mama's door, but she didn't get out. She was still honking the horn like a nut. We had to cover our ears. Dad said, "Nothing's changed." The door of a regular little old house opened. Me and Joey had never seen Grandma Sands in our lives. Byron said he could remember that she was the meanest, ugliest person in the world, but he was probably lying. He was only 4 the last time Mama and Dad were here. Byron said he'd had nightmares for a couple of weeks after they left Alabama 10 years ago. All the Weird Watsons had real good imaginations, but none of us was ready for what came out of the door of that house. I was expecting a troll.
I thought Grandma Sands would be bigger than Dad. I thought she'd be foaming at the mouth like she had rabies. I remember a couple of years ago how Mama had cried and cried when someone called from Alabama and told us that Grandma Sands had had a little stroke, so I knew she walked with a cane now. I'd imagined the cane would be as big as a tree trunk with crows and owls and lizards living in it. What came out was a teeny-weeny old woman that looked just like Mama would if someone shrank her down about 5 sizes and sucked all the juice out of her. Grandma Sands waved a little skinny stick in the air and said, "What you all doing here today? You ain't supposed to be here till Monday." Man, if you think Mama can talk Southern style, you should hear Grandma Sands. Mama was blubbering and smiling and covering her mouth with both hands and ran right up on the porch and nearly broke that little old woman in half. "How you doing, Mama?" She cried on the woman's shoulders, then held Grandma Sands out to look at her. "You look so good!" Boy, Mama can lie when she wants to. "Y'all come on over here and give your granny a hug," my Southern-style mother said. Me and Joey and Byron shuffled over in a little crowd, and when we got through pushing each other forward, I was at the front and had to go on the porch to hug Grandma Sands first. I tried to be real careful with her. She was just a little taller than me and skinnier than anything I'd ever seen alive. I could see her brown scalp right through her curly silver hair. Grandma Sands squeezed me hard and cried all over me. She wiped a bunch of tears away with a twisted-up hand and blinked a couple of times before she looked at me. She was so short, she didn't even have to look down. She tried to say something, but she couldn't talk. She just stuck her bottom lip out some and nodded her head up and down a couple of times, then pulled me back to her and squeezed me like crazy. Mama slapped the back of my head and said, "Kenneth Bernard Watson, you best quit acting so silly and give your grandmother a good hug." I squeezed her a little. A smell like baby powder came out of her when I did. I really think I could feel her lungs when I touched her back. I don't know what got Joey started, but she was off to the races with her tears. She was the only one who'd practiced what she'd say to Grandma Sands. She sniffed a couple of times and then said, "Hi, Grandma Sands. It's a real pleasure to meet you." You could only half understand what she was saying. She was blubbering so much. Grandma Sands matched Joey tear for tear. They squeezed each other for a while, then Grandma Sands got her little squeaky voice back and said to Mama, "Lord, Lona, if this child ain't you, look at this baby, just as pretty and sweet as you." Mama and Joey grinned like two nuts. Byron was next. This was what I'd dreamed about. These were the two meanest, most evil people I'd ever known, and I knew only one of them was going to come out of this alive. There was going to be a battle something like if Godzilla met King Kong, or if Frankenstein met Dracula, or when champion wrestler Bobo Brazil meets the Sheik. I'd imagined that a week or two after we got back to Flint, we'd get a phone call from Alabama with the winner of the big battle on the other end. If it was Byron, he'd talk kind of cool and low out of the corner of his mouth and say, "Shoot, man, you better come get this old chick. I ate her alive." If Grandma Sands won the battle, we'd have to hold the phone away from our ear while she shouted, "Lona, you call this a bad child? This little saint is ready to come back north and go to Sunday school and scrub all y'all's floors." But as soon as I saw Grandma Sands, I knew that Byron would destroy this poor old woman. I was even afraid Mama might decide not to leave him in Alabama. Byron walked up on the porch real cool and kind of bent over to give Grandma Sands a hug. Grandma Sands squeezed him hard. "Lona, what you teach these babies up north? Don't they know how to give no one a proper hug?" She held Byron by the arms and looked at him from top to bottom. "You grew up to be a fine-looking boy. You was so puny when you was born, you nearly worried us crazy. Got strong, too." She slapped Byron's arm, and he kind of laughed. Grandma Sands reached up and ran her wrinkly old hand over Byron's head. "A little short on hair, but we gonna get on just fine. What you think, Bi?" "Yes, ma'am." "Good. Good. See, there's lots of things you can do down here. Mr. Robert ain't as much help as he used to be, so all them things he used to do, you can do now.
Mama said, "Who? Mr. Who?"
Dad came up on the porch and got a ton of hugs and tears, too. Then Grandma Sands pulled everybody together. Her little arms could only get around one person at a time, but as the weird Watson stood there with some of us laughing, some of us crying, and some of us looking cool, it felt like we were all wrapped up in a big ball. Grandma Sands kept saying, "My family, my beautiful, beautiful family." Except with that Southern-style accent and all the weeping, it sounded like she was saying, "Family." Finally, the crowd started breaking up, and Grandma Sands said, "Now, what am I gonna feed y'all? I wasn't expecting you till Monday. Me and Mr. Robert usually just has leftovers on Sunday, but I guess if Bile go down to Job's and pick up some things, we can have chicken tonight. You good at following directions, Byron?"
"Huh?"
Bai's face twisted up. "What?" Grandma Sands' voice popped like one of those big brown grocery bags being snapped open. Bai looked surprised and said, "I meant, ma'am."
"You good at following directions? Job's is a good little walk."
I said, "He can follow directions real good, Grandma Sands. He's not as dumb as he looks." I shut up real quick and wished I hadn't said anything when Grandma Sands looked at me and said, "Lona? Maybe there's two who should be spending the summer down here with their granny." Everybody started going inside the ugly little house. Mama sounded worried.
"Mama, who is this Mr. Robert?"
Grandma Sands laughed just like the Wicked Witch of the West and said, "Honey, we got to talk. You just be patient. And soon's he gets up, I want all of y'all to meet him."
"Soon's he gets up? Oh, Mama."
Mama sounded real upset and disappointed, and Southern, but not as disappointed as me. The way Byron kept his head down and was smiling and saying, "Yes, ma'am, this," and "No, ma'am, that," it looked like he had surrendered before the first punch was thrown. Instead of King Kong and Godzilla, it was like King Kong and Bambi. Instead of Bobo Brazil and the Sheik, it was like Bobo Brazil and Captain Kangaroo. Instead of Dracula and Frankenstein, it was like Dracula and a giraffe, and Byron was all neck. He knew exactly what I was thinking. After Grandma Sands gave us directions, Byron looked at me sideways and said, "What the hell you staring at?" I just shook my head. "What you expect?" Bai asked. "You seen her? That bird's as old as dirt. She's so old I bet she used to step over dinosaur turds. I ain't gonna have her death on my hands." I knew that was a lie. It seemed like all of the fight was out of Byron and we'd only been in Birmingham for a couple of minutes.
That dog won't hunt no more.
Birmingham was like an oven. That first night, I couldn't sleep at all. Me and Bai had to share a bed, and we both were sweating like two pigs. It got so hot that Byron didn't even keep a sheet on himself to make sure I didn't accidentally touch him in the night. He finally slept on the floor because he said it was a little bit cooler. When I got up, Byron was gone. I looked out of the window into the backyard, and Bai and Dad and Mr. Robert were standing under a great big tree with a dog. I went to the bathroom real quick, did my morning scratches, then ran out to be with the guys.
"Morning, Kenny."
"Morning, Dad."
"Morning, Mr. Robert."
"Morning, Bai."
Byron just grunted, then said, "Man, you gotta quit drinking so much water. You sweated up the whole bed last night. I ain't sharing the bed with your leaky little bu—"
He looked at Dad.
"With your leaky little self again?"
Mr. Robert said, "You boys will get used to the heat." Dad petted the dog and said, "He's too old to hunt?"
"Oh, yeah. That dog won't hunt no more. He's just like me. Lost the desire. Both of us got to the point where we just couldn't pull the trigger.
Both of us got to be just like Joe Louis toward the end. Remember his last fights, Daniel? Remember how Joe'd just walk around the ring, waving that left fist like a threat? He just couldn't throw it. He just couldn't pull the trigger no more. His mind told him to do it, but his body wouldn't cooperate. That's me and Toady. There's times at night I hear him howling. I know he's dreaming about being back in the woods, but both of us know that's gone. Mr. Robert bent down and rubbed the dog's head. Yeah, son. In his day, this was the best coon dog in all Alabama. Used to get $100 just to stud him. Byron rubbed the old, gray, nasty-looking dog's head, too. $100? Man! Yep. Me and Toady saved each other's lives. Hate seeing him get so old. Judging by the way Mr. Robert looked, I bet the dog was saying the same thing about him. How'd you save his life? You ever been coon hunting?
No, sir.
Well, there ain't too many animals wilier or tougher than an old coon. Most people think you just chase them up a tree and pop them, but that ain't half the story. Toady trailed this coon all the way out to this lake, and the coon went in the water. Now, most of the time, a dog will stop right at the water. They know better than to go in. But Toady must have just dove right in after that coon. He must have been a half a mile ahead of me when I heard him holler and then get real quiet. What happened? The coon got him in the water and held his head under till he drowned him. I stopped believing this junk right there. A raccoon drowning a dog? I looked at Bi and Dad, but they were both believing what Mr. Robert was saying. Dad said, I've heard about raccoons doing that. Oh, yeah. Toady here's living proof. Byron said, if he drowned, how come he ain't dead? Well, when I finally got to that lake, I seen the coon going out one way and Toady nowhere in sight, and I knew what happened. I dove right in that water and started looking for him. Took me only a minute. I dragged him back to shore, turned him upside down, and let the water run out of him. Held his mouth shut and breathed right in his nose. He kicked a couple of times, then came to. Byron said, man, that's too much. That's cool. All I could think of was that Mr. Robert was probably the only human being who'd ever put his mouth on a dog's nose. That was pretty cool. I asked Dad, when do we eat? Kenny, you're the only one who hasn't eaten already. Your mother and grandmother are in the kitchen. Go on in. I went back inside. Even before I got in, I could hear Mama saying that Birmingham wasn't anything like what she remembered. Her favorite sayings got to be, what's this? And how long's this been like that? And when did that happen? And why did you do this like that? And most of all, oh, Mama. Grandma Sands thought Mama was hilarious and cracked up every time Mama got upset or worried about something that she didn't remember or didn't like. Grandma Sands must have seen The Wizard of Oz a million times, because every time she laughed, it sounded just like that Wicked Witch of the West. At first, her laugh was so scary that whenever me and Joey heard it, we wanted to go get behind something or someone. But after a while, we got used to it. It took us even longer to get used to the Southern style of talking. Man! Grandma Sands and Mama would get yakking to each other, and we could only understand half of the things that they said. The smell of bacon dragged me right into the kitchen. Mama, Joey, and Grandma Sands were sitting at the little skinny kitchen table yakking. Morning, Kenneth. Morning, Mama. Morning, Joey. Morning, Grandma Sands. You sleep okay? It was real hot. Joey was sitting in Mama's lap looking all drowsy. She said, I know. I was sweating all night. The bacon was sitting on a plate on a piece of paper towel. Mama had another piece of paper towel in her hands because all the things that Grandma Sands was telling her were making her hands get all sweaty and disgusting. I got some cereal and bread and bacon and sat at the skinny table with them. I must have interrupted something real important because as soon as I sat down, Mama acted like I'd disappeared and started asking Grandma Sands more questions. Well, what about Calla Lily Lincoln? I always wondered what she's doing. Lona? Didn't I write to you about that? They kept on talking and kept on oohing and aahing, and Grandma Sands kept on interrupting breakfast by scaring me and Joey with that laugh, and Mama kept on saying, "Oh, Mama." And she kept on having to get up and get more paper towels to wipe her hands, and most of all, she kept on talking more and more Southern style. They talked about how much trouble people were having with some white people down here. Who got married to who? How many kids this one had? How many times that one was in jail? A bunch of boring junk like that. It didn't get interesting until I noticed that Mama got real, real nervous right before she said, "And what about you, Mama? Mr. Robert seems like a nice man and all, but..." Grandma gave that laugh, and my spoon flew out of my hand and spilled cornflakes on the table. Mama acted like she didn't even notice, but without even looking at me, she handed me one of the nasty, soaking wet pieces of paper towel and kept looking at Grandma Sands. "I was wondering when we'd get to that," Grandma Sands smiled. "We've been good friends since right after you all left for Flint." Mama was being kind of rude. She interrupted and said, "Oh, Mama, good friends? What does that mean?" "Wilona Sands, what is it that's bothering you? Why don't you just say what's on your mind?" Mama started wringing the neck of another piece of paper towel. "I just don't understand what's going on here. How come I never knew him? Did Daddy know him?" Mama said that last part like she was dropping a bomb on Grandma Sands. Grandma Sands looked at her for a minute. "Lona, things are different from what they were when you left. Nearly everything changes. Your daddy's been gone for almost 20 years. Grandma Sands had stopped smiling. "Now, Mr. Robert is my dearest friend." Wow. I could see where Byron learned how to say a couple of words and have people think he'd said a whole bunch more. Grandma Sands didn't yell or scream or anything, but the way she said those couple of things made everybody who heard it shut their mouths and listen real hard. Even though she only told Mama that Mr. Robert was her friend, it seemed like I heard her also give my mother a real good scolding. Mama pouted and kissed the top of Joey's head. I picked up my spoon and kept eating. This was great. I'd never seen Mama act like a little kid who just got yelled at, but there she was, picking out a piece of paper towel and looking kind of embarrassed. Dad and Byron came in with Mr. Robert. "Mr. Robert's going to walk us over to the lake. Show us the best fishing spots for later. Joey, Kenny, you coming? Give these two some time alone to talk." Mama pushed Joey off her lap, and we followed the little parade outside. The heat made me and Joey feel like we couldn't wake up. I didn't want to do any walking, but the dirty dogs made me go anyway. The only kid that acted like he was having any fun was Byron. He walked the whole way with Mr. Robert and Dad and laughed and joked with them about every stupid story they told. When we finally got back, I went to sleep under a fan. They were going to force me to go fishing with Byron and Joey the next day, and I knew I needed a ton of rest. I started to think that making Byron spend all of his summer in this heat was more punishment than even a juvenile delinquent like him deserved. But he seemed like he was having a great time. I meet Winnie's evil twin brother, the Whirlpool. If y'all are going to the water, you stay away from Collier's Landing. A couple of years ago, Miss Thomas's little boy Jimmy got caught up in some kind of whirlpool there, and they didn't find the poor soul's body for 3 days. I'd only halfway listened to what Grandma Sands had said, and now me and Joey and Byron were standing at a sign with arrows that pointed in two directions. The one pointing to the left said, "Public swimming," and the other one, pointing to the right, looked like it had been on the post for a million years, but if you got close to it, you could read, "Warning, no trespassing, no swimming, no public entry." Signed, Joe Collier. "Oh man, Collier's Landing," I said. "Let's go." I knew Joey wouldn't like this, but I figured me and Bi could talk her into coming and not snitching. Joey said, Kenny. You heard Grandma Sands tell about that little boy getting lost in the water. What was that thing called that she said got him?" Daddy Cool said, "Didn't you hear what she said, Joey? She said he got caught by the Whirlpool." Is that a fish? Joey asked.
Uh-uh. You know who Winnie the Pooh is, don't you? Me and Joey both nodded. Well, the Wool Pooh is Winnie's evil twin brother. Don't no one ever write about him, because they don't want to scare y'all kids. What he does is hide underwater and snatch stupid kids down with him. I figured that dumb story was enough to scare me off, and he started walking in the direction of the public swimming. If Kenny wants to take his stupid little behind down there and get snatched, let him. Bai grabbed Joey's hand and started pulling her along with him, but she skidded her feet in the dirt. But Byron, what if the Wool Pooh comes down to where we're going? Can't he swim down there and get people too? Nah, Joey, the Wool Pooh don't come on public beaches. He just grabs folks that are too stingy to let peons come on their land, like this Collier guy. Who could understand Byron? Here was a chance for another fantastic adventure, and he was going in the wrong direction. Something was wrong with him. If he was in Flint and you told him not to do something, he'd go right out and do it. But now he was acting real dull and square. Maybe it was the heat. Maybe just like it had sucked all of the energy out of me, it had sucked all the meanness and fun out of Byron. What you gonna do, punk? Byron shouted over his shoulder. Joey yelled, Come on, Kenny. You know what Grandma Sand said? I couldn't believe it. I really wanted to go see where some kid drowned, and now Bai was choosing this time to listen to what a grown-up told him. Aw, man. I'm going to Collier's Landing. Byron shrugged. Have fun. I shouted, What's wrong with you? When are you going to start acting like you normally do? What would Buphead say if he saw you acting like this? Byron flipped me double middle fingers and another finger sign I'd never seen before and said, Just keep your stupid little butt out of the water. Forget you. I'm going. They kept walking. I'm not playing. Joey waved. I'm going to Collier's Landing. They were gone. I looked in the direction that the warning sign was pointing and started to get a little nervous. I turned and started to follow Joey and Byron, but finally decided I really was going to go to Collier's Landing. Maybe Byron was getting sick of having more fantastic adventures, but I figured I was getting old enough to have some myself. You're a couple of jive squares, I shouted, then walked off the way the warning sign pointed. Byron must have thought I was stupid. Who ever heard of something called a Wool Pooh? I wasn't sure what the lie was, but I knew Byron had made that junk up. Besides, if Winnie the Pooh had an evil twin brother, it seemed like I would have read about it somewhere. Some of the time, it was kind of hard to understand what Grandma Sands was saying, but I couldn't remember her saying anything about any Wool Pooh. If there really was something that snatched kids into the water, Mama and Dad wouldn't have let us come down here, would they? I knew all that stuff, but I was still kind of nervous when I followed the little trail that went through a bunch of bushes and led to the water. I forgot all about Byron's lies as soon as I saw the water. Collier's Landing was great. The water was dark, dark blue. And best of all, it was about 100 degrees cooler. Joe Collier had put up another sign on a giant tree. Warning, danger. No swimming. 6 lives been lost here. Bad drop-off. Signed, Joe Collier. 6? Grandma Sands had said 1 little boy drowned here, not 6. I felt dumb, but I looked real hard at the water to see if the Wool Pooh was hiding there. I even looked up and down the shore to see if there were any strange footprints on the ground. I was kind of worried because this sign looked a lot fresher than the first one. I kept waiting for Bai to jump out of the bushes and say something like, Aha, you little dope, I got you,